You're with Len Bedopik on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Len Bedopik Show here on today's News Talk TNT. We're just over halfway through, and coming up next in a few minutes' time will be James Roguski, who has it in for the World Health Organization. Why? Because they have it in for us, I think. He has got some killer facts about an organization that's meant to be keeping us alive, but maybe doing quite the opposite. We'll find out why he has such a downer on the World Health Organization in a few minutes' time. I declare an interest. I am inherently sympathetic to the position that James takes. That will be my opinion. And I suppose I'll be talking with him through that filter. That doesn't mean you have to agree. You can share your views. Perhaps you love the World Health Organization. I suspect not very many people who tune in to the Free Thinking Today's News Talk TNT do. But whatever your views, go to our chat at tntradio.live and you can have your say. You can also phone in. You've got the numbers there. We do get very busy. It's amazing. 4 hours go so fast on Saturdays and Sundays. But if I can, I'll squeeze you in on the phone as well. Wherever you are in the world, you'll find a phone number that works for you. Just before the break, I was with the Reverend Bishop Kai Dua, and as sometimes happens on live broadcasting, we had an unexpected moment of high emotion. Kai was talking about what I feel is his return to frontline politics. And my thoughts on this, rather than going through some of the news items I was planning to talk about, I want to talk about what we observed there. In my opinion, what we saw in Kai is everything that's missing in modern politics. He has a narrative, a story. He has a message of what he's trying to achieve. It's not for Kai to meddle in politics for the sake of calling himself a politician. For him, politics is a means to an end, a way of achieving something for the greater good. We also saw that this calling is deep-seated in him. The emotion that we saw in Kai was utterly authentic, completely sincere, and I found very moving. He said that perhaps we wouldn't want to see someone like him as prime minister. Well, I would. He's got values. He's got a moral code. And he's willing to promote that regardless of whether other people agree with it or not. For a man like Kai Dua, his values are not for sale. He won't bend to the opportunism of self-promotion. Instead, he puts it forward and will seek to engage and modify his views if you have a better argument. I haven't known Kai for very long, and I've known him primarily through today's News Talk TNT, and before that, in a very limited sense, through his political campaigning. But I think what we saw today is what I'd like to see as the mindset of our body politic. It is missing. It is, in my view, a desert of values, and it has fairly low-grade intellectual interest in the subjects it discusses too. That's why we have a disproportionate amount of attention on, for example, gender identity. It's an important issue if it affects you, but it doesn't affect most people, so we end up with a disproportionate interest in that, where many are struggling to make ends meet or worrying about a human-induced global nuclear cataclysm. The other reason I'm interested in Kai's approach is because he seeks to bring people with him. That is the essence of true leadership, not enforcing your will like the idiotic and hated 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in Wales, but by encouraging people to be aligned to what you're saying. For me, what we saw there was a rare moment of honest inspiration. And while Kai said we may not want him to be prime minister, you feel differently. Some comments here. Lord Melbury agrees with what I've been saying, I think. So does Mazzy. Hermetica says, Kai's passion shines through. I love this man. Lord Melbury says, Kai for prime minister. Can't be more clear than that. Hemingway says, Diolch'n fawr, Kai, which means thank you very much in Welsh. And Hermetica sums it up. We are extremely honoured too. And I think we were honoured to see such an honest, straight talker. Lord Melbury adds, Kai has an amazing strength of character. He's a good man, adds Mr. Moose. And a delightful conversation, Lembit and Guest, says Mazzy. Please bring Kai back again and again, Hermetica. I promise you I will. He is a great person. And Mr. Moose says, don't cry, Lambert. Well, I'm quite moved by that. I'm not going to lie. I was genuinely moved. The wonder of live broadcasting, if you do it sincerely, is you don't have to disguise how you feel. But perhaps in touching my heart, he also touched the world. And I do hope that we will see Kai on the airwaves, on platforms, and in power before long. Let's move on. Lord Melbury says, I followed James Roguski for quite a while now. And Hermetica says, I'm crying too. Yeah, well, it wasn't a very emotional thing. Let's hope that James doesn't make us cry, but he might make us shout in what he's going to say. But James has quite a pedigree here. He's a researcher, author, natural health proponent, and an activist who believes that the old systems are rightfully crumbling. And we need to get rid of the WHO and replace it with something new. This is the Lambertopic Show. We're going to get James Roguski on in just a moment, right here on TNT.
Getting straight to the facts.
Enough with the lies. We need facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
James, let's get one thing straight. How do I say your surname? I'm guessing it's Roguski, but it could be wrong.
Very good. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Is that Polish?
Yes, my grandparents came from Poland, and I grew up in Ohio and in the United States, and I'm now in California.
My parents are Estonian. I grew up in Northern Ireland, and I used to work in Cincinnati for Procter & Gamble, the great company there. And one of the most surprising things I ever saw was in Toy Story 2, the animated film by Pixar. And I recognized the street as the toys were crossing under cones to, I think it was Joe's Toy Barn or something. And then I realized it was actually the main street in Cincinnati. They computer generated the main street of Cincinnati. Who knew? Did you know that?
I did not know that. And, you know, the computer generated images are getting to be frighteningly accurate and confusing to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, it's only confused me. I never remember seeing Woody walking around in the high street there. Tell us something about yourself. You're in Ohio now. How is it that you've become such a learned voice about the shortcomings of the World Health Organization? What was your journey?
Well, you know, at this point in time, I'm in the Los Angeles area. I grew up in Ohio. And, you know, I'm approximately 64 years old, just turned 64. And the easiest way to summarize those 64 years, I identified last year when somebody asked me, you know, when I was born and how I got into doing what I'm doing. And so I'm born under the sign of Taurus. And so whenever I step in some BS, I just have to say something. And so what better, you know, than someone born under the sign of the bull to recognize BS when I see it. And so a couple of years ago, I identified some documents that the WHO were doing a really good job of hiding, you know, and so it's been an interesting journey since then. And at this point in time, I'm quite concerned about a psychological operation that seems to have infected the entire planet in regards to the WHO that I think will come as a surprise to most of your viewers.
That's a tantalizing advert. And let's come to it in just a minute. We have to go to a break shortly. But before we do go to a break, James, and I really want to dig deep because I have major concerns about the World Health Organization. Concerns that were really sparked off during the COVID scamdemic, I would call it. Before we go to that, though, I think we've got Darren from County Victoria in Australia on the line. Darren, welcome to the show.
Lambert, good evening. Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to chat with you. And I'm also a big fan of yourself, your program, and everyone at TNT. And also a fan of Mr. James Roguski, too. I just wanted to phone in. I've been wanting to call in for a while, but Lambert, you mentioned before about the body politic being an intellectual wasteland. If I can just give you an example from here in Victoria, our illustrious dictator Dan blew $530 odd million in a dreadful botch up of a Commonwealth Games application. And so now we, the people of Victoria, he didn't have to foot the bill, but now we, the people of Victoria, are being told that we have to, you know, tighten our belts because it's going to be tough and there'll be cuts and you know, because of the government deficit. Where else, Lambert, in business, Lambert, if I worked for you and went, look, sorry, Lambert, mate, you know that job that you put me on? I just lost you $530 million, mate. I'm tipping you'd be coming at me with a shotgun. Get these jokers, these imposters, walk away, and we are left to foot the bill for their incompetence. And talk about the body politic being an intellectual wasteland. It's also an emotional wasteland, in my view.
You feel very strongly about this. I'm frustrated by the sound of your tone.
Oh, Limit, absolutely. I mean, they're getting away with it, but it's not just happening here in Victoria and in Australia, in every state in Australia. Your country, the UK, they're doing it. America, you know, the US, it's happening. In all the Western governments, they're funneling all the publicly earned money into private enterprise. And then when things go wrong, they take no accountability, no responsibility. How do we hold these pieces of shit to account?
Yeah. I'm sorry about the language if this kid's watching. The question I've got for you, though, is this. This is a rough estimate of my own, but I think that the West is spending something like $40 million a day in Ukraine in a war which many think is unwinnable now. What do we do, Darren? Do you overturn the system or do you take control of it?
I think it's a combination of both, Lambert, isn't it? I mean, I mean, like I said, you know, it's the tail wagging the dog. We are the dog. We're not the tail, mate. Yeah.
But they do it the other way round. They act like the other way around. The thing that annoys me the most, Darren, is that, and we'll probably get to talking with James about this, that these organisations that are paid for by us, the dog, if you like, the tax-paying dog, act as if they're our rulers. They're not, they're our servants. But something's gone horribly wrong in the democratic system. Go on, Darren.
Yes, sir. No, I'm just in total agreement with you, Lemon. I don't know what we do. Short of me adopting the old, and all of us blokes out in the country of Victoria, putting on the Ned Kelly suits and storming Parliament House, I don't know what else we can do.
Well, there's hope in the sense that TNT, Today's News Talk, is growing quickly, and we clearly are trying to reintroduce free speech. Not a particular kind of free speech, it's just free speech. And the fact that we have so many 11 million plus per month viewers now, it maybe is something hopeful. But all I say to you, Darren, is never give up and never surrender. That's the point. And I don't know if you're sympathetic to Trump at all, whether you like him or not, he's definitely a fighter. He hasn't allowed the establishment to drive him down. So hope springs eternal, Darren. And you do live in a nice part of the world as well.
Indeed, sir. And you're welcome here anytime. I'll buy you a beer, mate.
Oh, that'll be the most expensive beer. That'll be a $2,000 beer. But I'll take you up on it. When I come to Victoria, you'll be the first to know. Darren, thanks for calling in. James, Darren's quite frustrated. Thank you for that, Darren. Just before we go to the break, Darren's obviously quite frustrated by the political system. I suspect you, James, have some similar views.
Well, you know, my personal opinion on that is I've been trying to raise the awareness of regular people, men and women around the world. There's you know, hope that people place in politicians. And I think in many cases, you know, it's ill-founded. What we need to do is get regular people to understand what it is that all of these organizations and people are trying to do in secret, in hiding, you know, to essentially serve themselves at our expense. And so campaigns come and go, politicians come and go. It's a little bit hard to get them to go. But what's needed is a solid base of information amongst the people so that they do exactly know what you're talking about. They are our public servants, and we need to be treating them like that. If you had a business, you know, you mentioned something like that earlier, or he did. If you failed to tell your employees the task at hand that you wanted them to accomplish, and they were just sitting around doing nothing, or, you know, taking advantage of the cushy job that they have, whose fault is that really, other than ours? You know, we need to make it very clear to our public servants how we demand that they serve us. And so everyone needs to look in the mirror and ask themselves, have you done as much as you could today to tell your employees what you want them to do? Or are they bossing you around?
It's a fascinating point. We're going to go to a break. And I also owe you an apology, James. Mayday says, Lembit, you're censoring Roguski. Get on with it. So without further ado, we'll have a break. And let's use the World Health Organization as a case study in how we might be able to bring these people to account. You're with me, Lembit Topic, and I'm with James Roguski, who will not be censored for the next 40 minutes here on today's News Talk TNT. See you after the break.
TNT's Pella Nuroff-Taylor.
Paint a picture of this, what it would look like. In its various aspects, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's not too hard to recognize. We can see what's going on in China in the same exact way. Social credit, surveillance, biometric tracking, facial scans, fingerprints, iris scans. All this is exactly what we're talking about. Drones, surveillance from the sky. You know, this is the kind of stuff that which most Americans may not be aware is already on your doorstep. It's already on the cameras in your stoplights. I mean, this stuff is everywhere. I'm not to suggest that those are iris scans in your stoplights, but surveillance, broad surveillance that has now begun to step into that. And so this is now something that we need to connect to immediately what's happening in our lives. And what we're talking about on the border is a both-way conversation. And this has been very public, right? That this is for Americans going out, Americans coming in, or legal immigrants going out, coming in, or illegal immigrants. And all of that's going to be tracking things that we should have a right to have a say in.
Pella Nuroff-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembit Topic Show. We're going to go back to James in just a minute. There's still a lot of chatter about Kai, my previous guest. Hermetica says, Kai is a man of God in the true sense. I'm not religious. I consider myself spiritual. This man moved me beyond being moved, a true leader. Mr. Moose very kindly says, you are a gentleman, Lembit, respect. Well, I just am who I am, as flawed as anyone else, perhaps maybe sometimes just a bit more willing to admit it. Lord Melbury says, you don't have to disguise how you feel. I think that's true. But we don't often get authentic emotions in politics, I don't think. Moving on to the World Health Organization, there's not much positive commentary here about that. The WHO, United Nations and World Economic Forum are not our friends. When you try to explain their agenda, says Lord Melbury, people just glaze over. Laziness, that will impact on their kids and grandkids. Mr. Moose suggests it's called the World Non-Health Organization. And Lord Melbury goes as far as calling it the World Homicide Organization, more like. James, tell us about the World Health Organization and why you don't like it.
Well, get ready for a punch in the gut, because I'm going to just dive right into this, okay? The negotiations that the WHO are conducting at the moment have been having great difficulties, and that is good news. But if you've ever watched a sporting event where, you know, maybe a rugby player or an American football player is running, you know, for a score, and they start celebrating, you know, several yards before the goal line, or maybe a road race or an automobile race, where someone thinks they're going to win, and then at the last minute, it's snatched from them. I am very concerned that there is a psychological operation going on around the world where the misinformation about what's going on with the WHO has just reached a fever pitch. People are so abundantly confused. Let me give you a punch in the gut and read something directly from the existing international health regulations. Article 31 says that states parties, which means nations, may compel the traveler to undergo invasive medical examination, vaccination or prophylaxis, or other health measures, including isolation, quarantine, or placing the traveler under public health observation. Now, the Article 24, they would seek to add an amendment where they could include isolation and quarantine as appropriate. Now, this is just one of the issues that is found in the international health regulations. What has been going on over the last year is a psychological operation of enormous proportions. And at this point in time, a lot of people are mixing together what is in the proposed amendments to existing international health regulations with something known as the pandemic treaty. And the level of confusion, the level of misinformation has gotten people to the point where I'm seeing articles saying, oh, the pandemic treaty has failed and, you know, long live the people, you know, the WHO is going down. Now is the time that we have to push even harder against this corrupt organization. Their house of cards is very shaky, but what's going on is people are so confused by misinformation. Hopefully we can gain some clarity today. I'm going to repeat this. This is the core issue in the world. By what right does any government official find the authority to say to another man, woman, or child, I have determined that it's appropriate to say that you are a hazard to other people? Is there a test that could determine that with any kind of accuracy? And how in the world could you claim that by having a certificate that you've received an injection of some kind of a poison, that that has made you not a hazard to your other human beings? The core issue that we are dealing with has not been addressed in these negotiations, has not been discussed by anyone in any kind of, you know, public setting. I'm going to repeat it again. By what right does any human being have the authority to essentially incarcerate someone, put them in isolation or quarantine, and override their fundamental freedoms of bodily autonomy and say that they need to have some sort of a test, that they need to go through some sort of prophylaxis, you know, take some drug, or be injected with some substance that is magically going to turn them into something that is not a hazard, and then they would be allowed to go, you know, live their life. What that is a control mechanism to only allow people who are compliant and allow themselves to be harmed, either, you know, through some sort of a drug or a jab. This is the issue at hand, and nobody is paying attention to it. This is Article 31 that is in the existing international health regulations and proposed amendments to Articles 24 and 27. Now, Lambert, let me just ask you, with all of the information that's out there, is this the first time you're hearing this?
I've never heard this before. Let me just check, in fact. Is this already in statute?
Article 31 is already statute from 2005. The game that they are playing, and they're trying to strengthen it, is almost everyone who is talking about this has been punked to focus in the wrong direction. The way these negotiations got started has been confused by everyone. This is not the WHO saying that, you know, they want to make all these changes to take over the world. These negotiations started for a completely different reason than most people think. The relatively low-income nations around the world were unhappy, and on December 1st, 2021, they decreed, after a special session of the World Health Assembly, that they wanted the WHO to oversee negotiations to ensure that the poorer nations would have access to diagnostics and drugs and jabs, because the wealthier nations, I'll use Canada as an example, Trudeau ordered 400 million jabs for 40 million people. And so the poor nations said, hey, we're not able to obtain, because there wasn't enough production, we're not able to obtain these, you know, wonderful high-tech mRNA biological weapons to inflict upon our people. And if you think back to when Omicron was, you know, in the news, South Africa and Botswana, when they identified the genetic sequence you can argue whether or not, you know, viruses exist and whether it's the terrain or you know, the infective nature of some pathogen. But what you cannot argue is they presented a digital sequence to the world and they said, be very afraid. This is a scary new variant. And what they were greeted with was, you know, travel restrictions that hurt their economy. But what really ticked them off was Pfizer and Moderna ultimately put that into the boosters and made a couple of more $1 billion. The negotiations are not about whether or not those jabs are of benefit, because they clearly are not. The negotiations are about the relatively poor nations want investment capital so that they could have geographically distributed manufacture of mRNA injectable products and be able to then profit from the manufacture of those products so that they can jab their own people and profit from that. This isn't about preventing the next pandemic. This is about profiteering from it. In the treaty, what really should be called a framework convention, because they want to set it up so that year after year after year, they have nations, you know, agree to an empty framework, and then every year they add to it when people are no longer paying attention. What they want to do is spend billions of dollars looking for pathogens with pandemic potential, which I call pathogens with pandemic profiteering potential, bring it into a WHO coordinated laboratory network. Now, I will overstate that a little bit, but essentially, I don't think we want to have a Wuhan Institute of Virology on every street corner. But they want to have laboratories everywhere to be looking for pathogens, you know, checking in your, you know, wastewater treatment plants, your septic systems, your, you know, if you have animals, if you have a chicken coop or a pigsty, or when your pet goes to the veterinarian, they want to take samples looking for pathogens. Maybe they find the new polio or the new Ebola or some kangaroo or koala virus, whatever it might be, so that they can then show this genetic sequence to the world, hand it over to the biohub where they start working on turning that into the next jab, put that into the WHO distribution and logistics network, which is the manner in which the WHO wants to operate. They've got a 20,000 square meter distribution hub in Dubai, which is just one of their six regions. Just imagine four football fields filled with pandemic related products. Can you imagine the corruption that you could be in control of if you were the mafioso in charge of that, you know, money laundering operation, whereby what you do is you claim that, oh, there might be this or there might be that, so we have to order billions of dollars worth of products, put them in the distribution hub. Well, you get to rotate your products. If you have an emergency here, an emergency there, an emergency somewhere else, let's pull that, you know, jab out of our warehouse, and well, we got to order another one. And what we're looking at is not what people think it is. And there is this mood around the world with, you know, less than 3 weeks, well, a little bit more than 3 weeks. Tuesday, May 28th is when they have scheduled that they're going to be discussing all of these potential agreements, amending the international health regulations and adopting a new treaty. And people who are awake and are pushing back on this are so abundantly confused as to what the heck is really going on. I'm deeply concerned about the situation around the world right now.
So one I don't get is where the profit comes from, because you have to sell it to somebody. So if countries can make this stuff, are they profiteering off their own citizens?
Well, in this particular case, what they're hoping to do is have investment capital flow from the wealthier nations through the way they have it right now. They're arguing over, do they want to have just one fund, or do they want it to filter through all kinds of different, you know, financial organizations? But essentially, the money comes from the wealthier nations, mostly from just the fact that they print money whenever the heck they darn well please. And so by taking wealthier nations deeper and deeper and deeper into debt, and transferring that money, you know, laundering it through all of these different organizations, the World Bank Pandemic Fund being one good example. Way back in November of 2022, the Indonesian health minister gave a presentation to the B20, not the G20, the government meeting, but the business meeting. And he said a couple of things. He was very proud of Indonesia. He's the Indonesian health minister, but he's not a doctor. He's actually a banker for 3 decades. And what he said was a couple of different issues. He said, well, you know, we want the economy to keep functioning. So the next time, based on the amendments that Indonesia had presented, people, if they were properly tested or properly jabbed, then they could travel. Well, hold on just a moment. The tests are fraudulent. They don't determine whether or not someone is a hazard to some other person. It's just a made-up BS test. And with the jabs, if an injectable product does not stop injection, does not stop transmission, deranges your immune system, and causes disease, disability, and death, both sudden and excess, how in the world can any human being cite those fraudulent things and say, if you comply with this, you know, abuse, this actual, you know, just torture, then we'll let you have the right to travel? But then he went on to say something that he knew in advance. It had been made public, but it wasn't signed into law. That happened the month after. In November of 2022, he knew that the United States Defense Department, through our National Defense Authorization Act, was about to put aside $5 billion over the next 5 years for the pandemic fund, which is essentially what I was talking about earlier. Go look for pathogens, have laboratories do all kinds of work on them so that you can scare people going forward. Well, the Defense Department wants to control that operation. They want to be doing all this biological weapons research and development under the guise of preventing the next pandemic. And so he knew that that money was about to start flowing. And he told the business people at the B20, this is a great business opportunity. Go invest. And so, you know, if you're in laboratory equipment or testing equipment or facilities, or, you know, if you're big enough to be manufacturing mRNA jabs, this is a spectacular growth industry. So they need to find pathogens. They need to scare people. They need to have everyone focus on, you know, be afraid, be very afraid, disease X is coming, or, you know, whatever the heck the next variant or other pathogen. They've even done another simulation. This is kind of old news, but most people don't know about it. If you've heard of Event 201, where the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Johns Hopkins University had a tabletop exercise about COVID in October of 2019, it pretty much played out, you know, true to form. Well, they also did one like that about what I call moneypox. But in October of 2022, they did something called catastrophic contagion. Well, what they're predicting in their simulation is that there'll be some sort of enterovirus in 2025 in, of all places, Eastern Venezuela. Well, Eastern Venezuela is a country known as Guyana, and they recently found oil and gas off the coast.
Right.
And in real life, not in the simulation, Venezuela has claimed that that's their land and they claim to have annexed it. Now, I had a little fun with it because they failed to secure the domain name catastrophiccontagion.com. So I snagged it and go there and learn what they're doing. This is what they simulated in October of 2022. Oh, there's going to be this big problem in 2025. And so we need to pay attention to the business aspect of what they're doing. This is not trying to take over your national sovereignty. This is not trying to take over the healthcare in your world. Wherever you may live, the tyrants that are local to you, they did not need any amendments or any treaty to abuse your rights and freedoms. They probably made the laws even stricter after COVID. What this is about is a corrupt mafia, you know, organized criminal syndicate. I call it the new OPEC. OPEC is the oil producing and exporting countries. Well, this is the Organization of Pandemic Emergency Corporations. They want to be able to scare the daylights out of people and have local officials implement, you know, whatever they would like to do that they did in the past. This is something that is nowhere near over. People need to really wake up, really pay attention, and really get informed about what in the heck is going on at the WHO.
Okay, hold that thought. We need to go to a break. But you're painting a picture where profits before people, and where I'll give you another example of something I think has been run in the same way after the break. But it doesn't exactly paint World Health Organization in a very positive light. You're listening to James with me, Lembit, here talking about the World Health Organization. Do keep your calls and comments coming. Doesn't look good for World Health Organization. What do you think? See you after the break.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Asthma is a growing problem, especially among children. Asthma affects the quality of life for millions like me every single day. My name is Chris Draft, and I have asthma. And I've spent more than a decade in the NFL tackling asthma on and off the field. Join me in the EPA in helping people control their asthma. Asthma is a lung condition that can be controlled through medication and by avoiding things that can make it worse. Three steps are the solution to controlling asthma. Step one, talk to a doctor. Step two, make a plan. And step three, get rid of things that can make it worse. Asthma can be tackled. For more information on asthma, log on to epa.gov/asthma.
Lembit Opic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. I'm still with James. A few comments here. Hemingway says, is it true there was no Hansard record of the UK's supposed membership of the WHO? I don't know the answer to that. Others say there wasn't. And here is one. Thank you, Lembit, for bringing James Roguski on. He is a real wealth of real information on WHO, criminal organisation, says Mr. Ted. Well, it does sound pretty bad, the way you described it, James. It also sounds quite similar to what I believe of the climate emergency, which is used as a way of transferring wealth to individuals, to organizations, and to less wealthy countries. The strategy you're describing, as I understand it from what you're saying, is there's nothing really to do with pandemic control, but it's to do with profit management. Is that too cynical? Are you too cynical about this? Is there no merit in the WHO at all?
Well, you know, when you simply talk about facts, you know, I don't know that cynicism is actually the issue. And the climate change comparison is spot on. I don't know how many people are aware, but in 1992, every one of the member nations of the United Nations signed on to the Framework Convention for Climate Change. And what a framework convention is that you agree to a framework, essentially a blank contract, and then they set up a conference of the parties, COP, COP, and on a yearly basis, you know, a group of unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats go and have a party, and while they're somewhere meeting together at the conference of the parties, they decide the fate of the world, and because nations agreed to the framework, that becomes obligatory. And, you know, how many people here know who it was that represented their country at COP28 in December of 2023? This is how they do it. It's not an attack on national sovereignty. It is a perverted way of actually enhancing national sovereignty. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. In the definitions and in the principles in the proposed, essentially, Framework Convention for Pandemic Prevention, Preparedness, and Response, the definition of sovereignty includes the sovereign right over biological resources. What is going on here is the poorer nations realize that any scary pathogen and or its genetic sequence is an absolute gold mine. Think back to late 2019, early 2020, when a data file was presented and it was claimed to be the genetic sequence of the Wuhan Institute of Virology 1 virus. They changed it to SARS-CoV-2 because calling it Wuhan Institute of Virology 1 is a little bit incriminating. And when that was presented to the world, over a weekend, it was put into production to make the Moderna and the Pfizer injectable products. I will not call them vaccines. Think about how much money that data file was ultimately worth. Hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions. Then think about Omicron. When Omicron showed up, they put that into production in the boosters. It took them a little while, but they ultimately did it. And what they're trying to do is ingrain in the world's psyche, oh, we found some data and we're going to stick it in a lipid nanoparticle and inject it into everybody's arms. And don't bother testing it. We've already determined that that's just wonderful. And the next one will make billions of dollars for some other company. And the next one will make billions of dollars for some other company. Well, the nations literally in their amendments, in my own words, this isn't how they wrote it. They said, you know, you fooled us once with Omicron. We're not falling for that again. We're not giving you any stinking data unless you share the benefits with us. That's what they call PABS. Sounds really nice and sweet. The Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing System. We'll give you access to our pathogens if you share some benefits with us. It's a business deal. And it's not about, well, wait a minute, how do we improve the health of the poor people in, you know, this, that, or the other country? This is about how do we get stupid people in wealthy nations to throw money into a whole group of funds where the intermediaries launder that money and hand it over to the oligarchs in relatively poor nations so that they can turn a profit by scaring their own people and making products that they inject into the people that they missed the first time around. Now, the psychological operation behind that is very powerful. You may say, and your audience may say, oh, I'm not going to fall for that. But start, you know, watching some scary movies and start thinking about, you know, how could they trick people again and again and again? Well, unfortunately, fear causes people to make really bad decisions. And if they come by and they do the monitoring that they do around the world and they look into some, you know, large city's sewer system and they take a dipstick and do a PCR test on whatever excrement they find, they could tell you that they found anything, and there's no way you would know whether they were telling you the truth or lying. Oh, we found this new type of polio, or there's a new Ebola, or there's, you know, new this and new that. They're checking excrement on international air flights to see what they can find. And if they can find something and concoct a convincing story and have those local officials believe them, and implement an emergency situation and say, oh, this area, you know, potentially is contaminated because we found something in the sewer system. Are you going to be strong enough and smart enough and informed enough? And are your neighbors going to be strong and smart and secure enough in their awareness that, you know, is this real? Should I get a jab? Should I listen to these experts all over again? The psychological games that they play has gotten most people right now on the internet saying, oh, the treaty is falling apart. Well, the treaty is having difficulty, but not for the reasons people think it is. The reason why the treaty is having difficulty is they're fighting over the money. And it's not good versus evil. It's not, oh, the African nations are pushing back. It's exactly the opposite. The African nations and the poor nations, they want this treaty. They want a piece of the pie, not the people in those countries. They're not going to see any of that money, but the oligarchs who have a seat at the table, the organizations and the foundations who are part of essentially a worldwide fascist collaboration that they call a public-private partnership, they're wheeling and dealing to direct money from rich nations into their pockets. And yeah. until people realize that this is not anywhere near over, and what they're attempting to do at the moment, according to the latest news coming out of Geneva, is they're not reaching an agreement. And so they want the world to sign on to an unfinished treaty and schedule ongoing negotiations for two or three different aspects of it. One of them is the surveillance, looking for pathogens. They call that One Health. The other is the PABS system, the Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing System. And the other is, where are we going to hide all this money? They don't want to put it in one fund because that would be obvious. So they want to try to organize all of these different ways of laundering the money to, you know, hide it. So they want to continue negotiating for two more years. They're shooting for May 31st, 2026. And, you know, people can't sustain this, you know, pressure and awareness for that long. So they play the long game. And almost everyone around the world, it's very concerning to me, has sort of let off a little bit. They think that we've achieved a victory because, you know, one set of documents has had some changes in it, and they're not actually looking at what the WHO is really, really doing. And it's, you know, it's an abomination. It must be stopped. If I can backtrack just a little bit, there's a handful of other things that we haven't touched on.
Just before you do, though, or maybe you want to come actually finish that point, because I want to ask you what would have happened if we hadn't done anything about COVID at all. But finish the point you're making, because it's a slightly different subject.
In 2022, the World Health Assembly violated Article 55 of the International Health Regulations, which says any amendments have to be presented 4 months in advance of the assembly, so every nation has an opportunity to review what's going on. Well, in 2022, on May 24th, in the middle of the assembly, they allowed a number of nations to submit amendments to five articles. 4 days later, on the 28th of May in 2022, they said that they adopted those amendments, but there's just a tiny little problem. They never bothered to vote. They just lied. They said, oh yeah, we accepted these. There's no record that they ever had a vote. 18 months to the day after that, 5 months ago, on November 28th, 2023, a dozen members of the European Parliament wrote a letter to the WHO Director General, Tedros, and said, hey, you guys say that these amendments are going to be entering into force on May 31st, 2024, you know, just a couple of weeks from now, but you guys never voted. And Rob Roos, who's one of the members of the European Parliament, actually flew to the United States and presented this information to Senator Ron Johnson in public. It's on video. People can watch it. And the room gave a collective shrug. Eh, whatever. It's astonishing to me that you can present evidence of fraud that should take down Tedros Ghebreyesus, the director general, and our political leaders just kind of go, eh, what are you going to do? Right. Well, they're doing it again. They were supposed to publicly show whatever amendments they're going to be presenting at the end of May by January 27th, 2024, 4 months in advance of the meeting. Well, they told us in October that they were going to miss that deadline. They conspired to just keep going. They met in February. They met in March. They've met in April. They're supposed to have a new version of the amendments by May 10th. And then they're going to have another meeting on May 16th and the 17th. Where's the four-month notice? We're not even allowed to see what they're contemplating. And they still haven't finished the other agreement, the treaty. So this organization is so corrupt that if you look at any organization that is willing to violate their own rules and lie about voting on amendments and you know, miss their deadlines and knowingly and publicly conspire to violate their own rules, the only answer is to exit the WHO and abolish them. This is not, you know, these negotiations need to stop. They need to stop now. And people around the world need to wake up. because all is not good at the WHO. All is very, very rotten. And we, the people, need to stand up and make this horror stop, because it's predicated on a fraud that you can have a test to see if someone is a hazard to other humans. And you can claim that by injecting a poison into them, they suddenly are no longer a hazard. Well, if you know anything about shedding, the people who got the jab are probably more of a danger than the people who didn't. So wake up, world. You know, this is not over. This is only getting started.
Mr. Ted says, James, I called it global mafia and I was banned from Russia today. I'm wearing that as a badge of honor ever since. What would have happened if we'd done nothing about COVID, if we just let it run?
It probably would have been like just about any other year. Now, you know, people pass away on a regular basis, unfortunately, around the world. And this actually leads me to something that the WHO has failed at for 76 years. In the World Health Organization's constitution, Article 21 empowers not the World Health Organization, but the World Health Assembly to write regulations on a handful of things. I'll run through them very quickly. The World Health Assembly, this meeting of all the nations, has the authority to write regulations and determine, you know, specifications on cause of death, on diagnostic products, on the quality and purity of biological and pharmaceutical products, and they have the right to set regulations for advertising and labeling. Labeling being, you know, those blank inserts that didn't give anybody any warning about all the side effects. The World Health Assembly has never in 76 years entered any of those types of regulations into the international health regulations. And they're going to fail for the 77th time to do so. Had they had good specifications for cause of death and diagnostics and purity of products and advertising and labeling, maybe a lot of the misinformation and the case-demic and the plandemic and the fear-mongering that came from fraudulent tests and fraudulent jabs would have been less than it was. But they have no intention of doing that, because all of those things would limit the profits of the pharmaceutical companies that, you know, they don't donate. They talk about it as an investment. And in their documents, they literally claim that nations, when they make investments in the WHO, get a 35-to-1 return on their money, because the WHO saves them so much money by instituting all of these, you know, jab programs around the world. They look at it as an investment. And what we have to be aware of is that he who pays the piper calls the tune. And the vast majority of the money that the WHO receives is earmarked by the people who invest or donate that money. And they're not doing it for your benefit, I can guarantee you. They're doing it for the, you know, the money headed back into their wallets. And that's what these negotiations really are about. It's trying to settle a trade dispute by building an organized crime syndicate that all of the people sitting around the table want to, you know, gain profit from. And they're not trying to end pandemics or prevent them or prepare for them. The preparation they want to do is have a whole bunch of products, you know, in warehouses. They would have already received the contracts. There's all kinds of contracts that kick into gear when they go, oh, it's a pandemic. You know, let the money flow. And people around the world, please wake up. This is not over. This is not even close to over. Pay attention, get good information. Everybody can give me a phone call anytime. 310-619-3055. I'm in California. I'll call you back if I miss your call. Send me a text message, Telegram, WhatsApp, whatever. 310-619-3055. All my information is on jamesroguski.substack.com. We need to stop the WHO now and abolish them as soon as we possibly can.
Thank you so much. And thanks for sharing your phone number with 8 billion people as well. James, hope you're not too busy with that. Really appreciate you spending an hour with us. Fascinating. I had very little to say because you say it so eloquently and you put it together so well. Thank you.
Thanks,
we'll have you
me.
Back. I hope that we have some success with this. Let's get our servants to be just that, servants rather than our rulers. Coming up next is a servant of the people, re-elected Conservative Greater London Assembly member, Keith Prince. He's actually at City Hall now. We're hoping to get him live from there. You're watching the Lembitopic Show here on Today's News Talk TNT. We'll see you after the break.